Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yudalit Amud Bet. The Gemara is discussing the Mishnah that we just read, which is that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, in this case of the rape of the young girl, we can assume that she is not to psula in the instance where the rove of the individuals in the city are ksherim lekehuna. The Gemara wanted to understand, according to whom does Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri say this? We've had two positions prior to this, the position of Rabbi Gamliel. Ben Gamliel says that the woman is ne'emenet, whereas we had the position of Rabbi Yoshua who says the woman is eina ne'emenet. And the Gemara pointed out, and that's what we finished off with yesterday, Amalei Rova the Rav Nachman, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri damar keman. Who does Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri subscribe to in his position? Iker Rabban Gamliel, if he holds like Rabban Gamliel, afilu berov psulim, nami mechashar, Rabbi Gamliel believes that even when the rov are psulim, she is ne'emenet. Because of her Tanat Bari, along with either the Chazakah, or along with the fact that she has a Migo, or with the fact that a woman is Bodeket Umidzana, for all of those reasons, we know that Rabbi Gamliel believes that a woman is Ne'emenet, even in the face of Rov Psulim. We discussed Tosafot's question about the comparison of this case to those cases, and Tosafot comes up with a situation that matches it up with those previous cases. He holds like Rabbi Yoshua, afilu b'rov k'sherim. Even if there are rov k'sherim, nami postil, she is not believed. Rov does not make a difference to either of their opinions, not to the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel, not to the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua. And we saw that statement from Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi earlier, that it, whoever says that it's kasher, that's ben rov k'sherim, ben rov psulim. Whoever says that she is psula, that's ben rov k'sherim, ben rov psulim. So rov should have no impact on the halacha over here. And that's why the Gemara is perplexed as to who is Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri subscribing to in his position in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Amalei, Hochi Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav. This is what Rabbi Yehuda Marav says, Bikronot Shel Tzipori Haya Ma'aseh. The incident took place in the Kronot, really comes from the word Karon, so it means in the wagons, in the caravans of Tzipori, which either references to these iterant merchants that came through for the Yom HaShuk, or references the shuk itself where all the gronot used to get together. So that's where the incident took place on the day when it was the day of the shuk. So we were not limited to the people of the city. Ukud Rabbi Ami, the Amarei Rabbi Ami, v'hu shaita si'ah shel bnei adam k'sherim overet l'sham. On the condition that those people that were coming through this caravan or those people visiting for the shuk also had a robe associated with them, that the robe of those individuals were also k'sherim. Ukid Rabbi Yanai, and similar to what Rabbi Yanai says, Dam Rabbi Yanai, Nivelet Bikronot, Ksheira de Kuna. If a woman is Nivelet when the Kronot are there, she's Ksheira de Kuna. Gemara says, Bikronot, Salgadatcha? What does this have to do with the Kronot or the caravans? Ela Nivelet Bishaat Kronot, Ksheira de Kuna. Rather, you have to read it that she was Nivelet at the time that there were Kronot in this city. Aval, on the other hand, Perash Echad Mitzipori, Ubal, and one individual came from Tzipori and had biyah with her, Havlad Shtuki. Then we have a safeg about the baby that is born from that incident. Kiha Dichiato Rabdimi Amar Ziri Amar Bechina. So like, this is similar to what we have from when Rabdimi came, Amar Ziri Amar Bechanina. The Amri Law, and some say Amar Ziri Amar Bechanina, that Rabbi Chanina said this in the name of Ziri without the Rav Dimi bringing it from Eretz Yisrael. Hochim achar rov ha'ir vein hochim achar rov si'ah. We go after the majority of the city. We do not go after the majority of the caravan that's there. The Gemara says, kabe layo. It should be just the opposite. The logic here is reversed. Haini naide v'haine k'vivi k'ayme. The caravan are moving. They are individuals that are not in location or in place, whereas the people of the city are in place. This comes to a principle that we have by rov, which is anytime we have a rov, called the parish miruba, anything that comes away from the rov, we consider it to be the rov. So called with the parish miruba, miruba parish. Anytime we find an object that has come out of a majority, we assume that object is similar to the majority. On the other hand, if the objects are stationary and do not move, and we have a question about that object that is stationary, we view it kmechsa mechsa dami. We view it as a 50-50 case, 50% chance yes, 50% chance no. It no longer is dictated by the rov. We'll discuss this more in detail as we move through the Gemara. But what the Gemara is pointing out is that it's more likely for us to be matir if we assume the individual came from the siyah, which is a moving object, and a person who left that is moving from the rove to be matir that, because that's called the parish meruba remuba parish. On the other hand, somebody came from the city is kviya v'kaimin. The city is stationary, and the individuals in the city are stationary. If that's the case, we would assume that it's a case of mechsa mechsa. So the Gemara says, Ella, holchim achar rov ha'ir. V'ho de'ika rov siyah b'hada. Even though the language doesn't read perfectly well here, what the Gemara in the end is saying is that the rove of the city is not sufficient over here. We need the rove of the caravan along with it. V'ein holchim achar rov ha'ir gredita. But if you just have the majority of the city, we do not follow the majority of the city. V'lo achar rov siyah gredita. And we also do not follow the majority of the caravan alone. Even though the majority of the caravan alone should have precipitated a case of rove, nevertheless, we don't follow that. My taima, zeirov siya, atu rove ayir. Because we're worried about if we allow you to follow just the rove of the caravan, you also do the same thing when it comes to the rove ayir. And when it comes to the rove ayir, we cannot follow the rove or the majority over there, because that's a case of mechsa mechsa. That's a case of 50-50. So the conclusion of the Gemara over here is that in this case, the reason that we are matir is because there is a double rove. There is a rove of the city that are kshirim, and on top of that, we have another rove, which is this caravan that is passing through, or the Yom HaShuk that's coming through, that also brings in additional individuals into the city who are also adding on additional roves kshirim that are there. So what's what we call Shrei Rube. It's two classifications or areas of rove that would be a double safek, in a sense, which is two rubim that allow us to be matir in this case. And that's the answer of the Gemara. According to whose position was this said? So Rashi over here claims, this is Olam ki Rabbi Yoshua. This is in Rabbi Yoshua's position, who says, Eina ne'emenet, because she's not believed in a normal case. But we know that Rabbi Yoshua, in the case of Sveik Sveika, says that we are matir in the case of Sveik Sveika. So Trey Rube creates the simulation or a similar circumstance to Sveik Sveika, because the double robe makes it most likely that we're talking about a kasher. Because they might have come from the siyah, from the caravan, and if they did, they were kasher. And they might have come from the city. If they came to the city, they're also kasher. So you have a sveik where they came from, and if they came from either one of them, there's a robe. So you have equivalent of what we call a sveik sveika, and that's why they would be matir in this case. That is the shito of Rashi. In Rashi's shito, it's not clear what Rabban Gamliel would hold in this instance. It might be that Rabban Gamliel would disagree in this case, because we saw before that Rabban Gamliel believes even in the case of Sveik Sveika, you still need a Tanat Bari. Sveik Sveika is not enough to be a matir, and maybe Rabban Gamliel actually would be a machmir in this case and say that she is not believed, as opposed to Rabbi Yeshua, who would be matir. That's one way to view Rashi. The other way to view Rashi is that this is the sheet of Rabbi Yeshua, but of course, according to Rabban Gamliel, she would be believed, because even without two roves, she would be believed. So certainly with two roves, it's not going to make it any worse. Those are two ways to read Rashi. Rashi is a pretty singular opinion over here. Most of the Rishonim say that this is in both positions. This is both in the position of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel, and both of them in this instance require Trei Ruve in order to be matir. And therefore, this statement of the Gemara is according to both, and they both would be matir in this case of Trei Ruve. Now, moving on to the next question, the question of Rove. How is Rove determined? We saw over here a distinction in the Gemara that we'll continue to move through the sugya, which is that we have two cases of Rove. We have a case of Rove, which is called the Parish Meruba. Anything that comes out of the Rove, we assume is a part of the Rove. But then we also have this idea that kol tekavuah k'mechsa mechsa dami. Anything that is a fixed item, it's considered as a 50-50, even though there's a rove of items here. The Gemara will give an example of stores, meat stores, and finding pieces of meat, and we'll see more details about that. The question really that arises here is, why is there any difference here between those two? Statistically, in truth, the rove should dictate in both of these cases. And the truth is that in terms of the logic over here, Rav Chalchanan Wasserman, in describing it, in the end, comes down to the bottom line and says that it's Gzeirat HaKatuv, which we'll see later on in the sugya. The Gemara quotes a pasuk for the source called the Kavua Kamechsa Mechsa Domi, that anything that isn't fixed in place is like 50-50. So in the end, it's Gzeirat HaKatuv. What the Rishonim are really battling with or trying to figure out is, where is that threshold? What is called Kavua and what is called Parush? Because in the end, anything that is parush, especially when you deal with human beings, in the end will always be kavua, because human beings always return to their location. So in truth, every human being or any person that you're dealing with are always considered to be kavua. So how can we ever have cases of parush by people? So Tosafot over here claims that the reason that we say that here, everybody is considered a parush of a hocha, ki azle inu legaba bishat osha usra harihu nayad. That when the person was doing the crime or committing the act, he was nayad. He was in motion, he was moving, and therefore he's not considered to be kavua in that instance. And so that's how most of the Rishonim explain over here, that this idea of kol kavua kemechsa mechsa domi applies to individuals when they act or the problem happens when they are kavua. But if they move, or they are parush, or whenever the incident happens when they are nayad, moving, that is considered to be called the parish, miruba kaparish. So that distinction will not be with the ultimate settling of the individual, but where the crime is committed or how the crime is committed. And that's how we'll make that distinction. But based on what Rabbi Chanan says, there's no really logical argument for saying that in one case we would follow the rove, and in the other case we would not follow the rove. So that is the basic approach that we'll take to this sugya, is that there is no real logic behind it. People who have suggested the logic behind it suggest that it has to do with the statistical probabilities that come about from rove. One can only talk about statistical probabilities when you talk about something that happens by chance or something that happens without any intent behind it. Then you can say that whatever happened statistically was part of the majority. On the other hand, when you're talking about something that is kavua, something that's fixed in place, that means that it's no longer a part of something happening by chance. It's not something that didn't have intent involved with it, and therefore you can no longer say that it is part of the statistical probability, because there are other factors that anchor it away from the statistical rove. That's how people explain the difference, but again, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, bottom line, says that the difference here is really a gzera takatuv. So now the Gemara continues and says, wait a minute, you just told me that this whole situation here has to do with a rove with regards to a si'ah, because the si'ah adds on this additional aspect that it's a moving object, and therefore that rove is significant in saying, kol de parish miruba parish, whereas the city which is fixed, in that case, that rove isn't meaningful because it'll be nidon ke mechsa mechsa dami. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute, verova yir nami. Ida ga'azle, by the rova year also, ida ga'azle inhu de gaba, if they went to her, called the parish, miruba parish. If the incident took place where these individuals went to her, meaning that the rape incident happened by the people leaving their houses and going to this individual, then again, you're subject to someone leaving a group. And when they leave the group, we have to assume statistically they came from the rove. So then in that case, the city also should have a rove and should be done or nidon be rove. And not mechsa mechsa. Where it says, lo, tzricha de gazla ihi le gabayhu. It's a case where she went to the hem, tavale kavua. Because in that case, the individuals are, quote unquote, stationary. They didn't leave their location. And since they didn't leave their location, we cannot apply the principle of kol de parish, that something that left the group is miruba parish, because over here they didn't leave. They were stationary. She went to them. And because of that, the incident took place. And in that case, anytime you have a case of fixed in place that has a we assign it a statistical probability of 50-50. So that's what the answer of the Gemara here is, that this is a case where the woman went to them, and because she went to them, that's what created the issue over here, and that's why it's nidon kemeksa meksa, and that's why the rove of the city does not suffice over here. So in addition to that, we need the rove that is associated with the siyah, with the caravan that's joined here. Now the Gemara asks a very fundamental question, umi bein en shrei rube. Since when do we need a double rove in order to be matir something? V'adanyo. Don't we have a breita? Teisha chaniyot gulan mochrot basar shchuta. You have 9 stores in the city that sell kosher meat. V'achad mocheret basar nevela. And one of them sells non-kosher meat. V'lakach machat mehen. And he purchased meat in one of these stores. V'enu dea. He doesn't know which one? My me'eze mehen lakach. He doesn't know from which one of these stores he purchased it. Sveiko asur. In that case, misafek, it's asur, because this case is 50-50. It's a case of kavua. All the stores are fixed in place. He went to the store to purchase the meat. The only question now is, into which store did he enter? Well, if you're asking that question, that's looking at a kavua, something fixed in place. There, we'd only look at it as a 50-50 probability rather than going after the rove. Ubenimtza, on the other hand, if he finds a piece of meat laying out on the street, then how do we know what that meat is? Haleich achar harov. In that case, the rove will be koveya, because that is b'chol deparish miruba kaparish. Now, in that incident, there was only one rove there, the rove of the number of stores. So you see over there, let's say the meat is kasher when you find it out on the street, because you only needed one rove. It says, if you say it's in a case where the city is open, and that means that there are outside parties entering over here, so for one of two reasons, Tosafot says either the majority of that country also has kosher butchers, or there was a visiting group of individuals or caravans that came through that also had a majority of kosher meat with them, and therefore you have Trey Rube over here. So then you have an additional robe over here, and that's why over here we're matir, because there actually are Trey Rube. Rabbi Zeira says that even if the doors of this city or this area are sealed, which means that the only robe we're dealing with is the robe of the city, that is sufficient. So the Gemara answers, you are right. Generally, when we deal with issues of Isur, you only need one robe. But when it comes to Yuchasin, Mala Asuba Yuchasin, they made something special or unique with regards to Yichus, that they demanded a double robe in order to be machshir someone to be ksheira the kuna or ksheira the kahal, depending on what the circumstances are. And that is unique to the case of Yuchasin. And so now, in the conclusion, the Gemara drops this approach of gzeirot of the siyah and gzeirot of this, but basically says that when it comes to Yuchasin, we require trei rov. Has nothing to do with the statistical probability or any halachic issue. Mikar Locha, one robe would suffice over here. But because of Yuchasin, they made a special status. That special status demands that there be two robe here. Kufa, Amar Rabbi Zeira, Kol Kavua, Kemechsa, Mechsa Domi. You just made a statement that Rabbi Zeira believes that anytime you have something fixed in place, and the object is not moving, and the question is that the person went to that object or went somewhere, and we want to determine if they came into contact, they bought something there, they did something there, We assign the probability of 50-50 that it happened. We don't go after the rove because the object is fixed in place. So ben the kula, ben the chumra. That's whether it goes the kula or the chumra. Menalei v'le Rabbi Zeira ha. Where does Rabbi Zeira have that from? Ilema miteisha chaniot. If from the case that we just quoted before, the braita that we quoted with regards to the 9 butcher stores, kulan mochrot basar shkuta v'achat basar nevela, lakach ma'achat mehem v'inudeh me'ezem lakach, sveko asur. In that case, when it's a safek, asur, because it's kemechsa mechsadomi. V'nimtza, if he finds it out on the street, aleich achar rov. Hotom l'chumra. Over there, in that case, by the braita, we say that, yes, we see that when it's kavua, we can assign it a 50-50 probability and it'll be asur. That's l'chumra. So there we were machmir because we consider it kemechsa mechsa. Ella, where do we learn out l'kula? Mitisha svardeim v'sheretz echad b'nehem. Maybe we learn it out from the Tosefta in Taharot. That says if you have 9 frogs and 1 sheretz, the frogs do not make the individual tamei. Coming into contact with the dead sheretz would make the individual tamei. V'nagaba achad mehen. And he touched one of those items there. 10, he touched one of the 10. V'enudei meiz mehen naga. He doesn't know which one he touched. Sveiko tamei. In that case, misafeki is tamei. Marcel's hotam nami luchumra. Over there, right. Again, we're saying hold the kavua. They were stationary. He came and touched them. So we're going to assign it a 50-50 probability, even though 9 of them were Tehorim and 1 was Tamei. We're going to say 50-50 and it's a Safek and therefore he is Tamei. But again, that's the Chumra. Ella, from another Tosefta in Tohorot, which says, Mitisha Shratzim Mevitz Vardei Achad. Case where you have 9 Shratzim that would make him Tamei if he came into contact with them, and 1 Svardeya, which would leave him Tahor. Benehem, Benagar Bechad Mehem, and he touched one of those items. Venu Deya Bezim En Naga. He doesn't know which one he touched. Birshute yachid sveko tamei. When he is in the private domain, he is tamei. Birshute rabim sveko tahor. If he's in the public domain, the safek is tahor. So over there you see that we go to kula and say it's tahor. So there, even though the overwhelming majority are shvatzim, where he should be tamei, nevertheless, we look at it as a 50-50 shot. And if it's a 50-50 shot, it's dictated by the location and not by the probability. If he's in the private domain, tamei. If he's in the public domain, he's tahor. That's based on the Gemara in Sota, which learns out from Sota this paradigm that any times you have a safek in the private domain, because that is the story or the case of sota, in that instance we say sveka tmeya. We assume that she is tmeya in that case of safek. Whereas if you're in the public domain, we would not say that. And therefore, based on that paradigm, the Braita, the Tosefta says over here, in a case, even though the overwhelming majority of the items there are tmeim, and only one of them is tahor, nevertheless, when you come into contact with it, we look at it as a 50-50 shot, because it's kogda kabua kamechsa mechsa domi. Therefore, in Reshuta Yachid, where we say safek, when you have a 50-50 shot, it goes tamei, it's tamei. In Reshuta Rabim, where we say 50-50 is tahor, then it goes the tzad tara. So there you see it, lekula. So here we see proof to Rabbi Zera's position that kol de kavua kamechsa mechsa domi applies both to chumra and lekula. Now the Gemara says, umi do'oraita minolan. Where's the source for this in the Torah? Amar kra. The pasuk says, varav lo v'kamalav, that he waits to trap him, or he is in waiting to kill him, and then he goes ahead and kills him. Ad shid kavein lo. Rabbi Shimon, who's the author of this position over here, says that if you intend to kill one person, and unintentionally you killed another person, you are not chayav. This is Rabbi Shimon, the Shittato throughout Sha'as, that Rabbi Shimon believes that Kavanah is paramount. That's why he says, Dover Shu'en Mit Kavain is Mutar. So over here he says the same thing. If a person intends to kill one individual and then kills someone else by accident, even though they did it with brutal force and they did it in a manner that would kill, nevertheless, they are not Chayav because their intended target was not reached. He learns that out of this Pasuk. Farav lo v'kamalav. He planned. He was in waiting for this particular individual and killed this individual. If that's not the case, then he's patur. V'rabono. The Rabbono disagree with Rabbi Shimon and believe that nitkaven lezev aragadzeh is chayav. If you intend for one individual and end up killing another individual, then the person is chayav. Amrei d'Rabbi Yanai. What do they learn from this pasuk? Prat l'zareg evin lego. This is to exclude a case where he throws a rock into a place where there are a bunch of people standing that he will not be chayav. Heichidami. What's that case? If it's a case where there are 9 Knanim standing there, and 1 Yisrael, Benehem, typically deruba Knanim ninu. Over there, the reason that he is patur has nothing to do with the Gzerat HaKaduv, it has to do with the Rov. Over there, you have 9 Knanim and 1 Yisrael, so of course he should be patur. Inami palgo palgo, even if you say over there, well, that's kavua. That's a place where he's coming to them, he's throwing the rock to them, so they're kavua. So it should be kamexo mexo dummy, palgo palgo. Safek nam veshot, lakel. In that case, we're not going to put somebody to death in a case of a safek. In a case of safek nam veshot, we go likula. Now, Tosafot discusses over here how exactly this case works. How do you have hatra'ah over here? Because if you can give a safek hatra'ah, why are you patur? And if you can't give a safek hatra'ah, how are you chayav? So Tosafot over here comes up with a way that they could give hatra'ah that would work over here, even though it might not work in other cases. Where it says, Lo tzricha de'ika tisha Yisraelim mekanani echad. Case where there are 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kanani. Benehem. That stands amongst them. The Havelei Kanani Kavua. Over there it's a Kavua. V'chol Kavua kemeksa meksadomi. That's considered to be 50-50. So even though in a case where you have tisha Yehudim and 1 Kanani, we should have assumed over there that he's Chayav. The Rove are Jews. So he definitely, when he threw the rock over there, she should have assumed that he's going to hit a Jew. And therefore he should be chayav when he hits a Jew. Nevertheless, we say when he throws the rock and it hits someone, he's not chayav. Why? Because when he threw the rock, it was a 50-50 chance that he would hit a Yehudi or a Kanani. So it's a 50-50 chance. That's a safek nefashot. So when it hits one of them, it was a 50-50 shot. We can't say that he was nitkavein for that individual. He had intent for that individual. And in that case, the chachamim say, patur. That he is not held culpable for that action. So you see from here that mina Torah, even in a case where the majority should dictate over here that he should be chayav, nevertheless, since they are stationary and they're in place, we view it as a 50-50. So even though the minority is a Knani over here, in all likelihood he's going to hit a Jew on the other side, and he should be held culpable for that, nevertheless, we say it's kamechsa mechsa and he's patur. Why? Because we view kol de kavua kamechsa mechsa dummy, and this is the source mina Torah, for this principle. And that's what Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman says is the Gzerat HaKatuv. The Gzerat HaKatuv is that kol kavua kamechsa mechsa dummy, even though there's no real logic behind that, because statistically, the rove over there should be no different than the rove that you find when it is poresh, when it separates from that group. If one person from that group walked away, you clearly would say that it was dictated by the rove. So it should be no different when you throw your rock towards the group, and the likelihood of it hitting that group, 9 Yehudim, 1 Kanani, the rove should be that it's going to hit a Jew. Nevertheless, we dictate that it is Mex, it's like 50 or 50, because of this principle, Minat Torah. So now we go back to the Mishnah. Itmar Rav Chiya Barashi Amarav, Halocha Ki Rabbi Yossi. The Halocha is like Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. Rav Chanan Barova Amarav Horat Shah Haita. Yes, on El Chanami, what Rabbi Yossi did, or Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri did in our Mishnah was correct, but it was a one-time thing, the Kula. Generally, we will not paskin like that. So, Meiti Rabbi Yirmiya Uliuchasin Lobin and Trey Rube? Wait a minute. How could it be that Rav is paskin like Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah? Don't we require Trey Rove for Yuchasin? We just established that in the Gemara. So how could it be that Rav is paskin like our Mishnah, and that'll become the Halacha LeDorot, that you only require one Rove, as is dictated in the Mishnah? Vatznan, and we have a Mishnah that says, Matzah Batinok Mushlach, if they find a baby abandoned in the city, Imrov Ovdei Kochavim, if the majority of the city is Ovdei Kochavim, you can assume the baby is an Ovdei Kochavim. Imrov Yisrael, if the majority of the city is Yisrael, Yisrael, you can assume he's Yisrael. Mechsa, if it's a 50-50 city, then Israel, we determined to be Israel. V'amar Rav, lo shonu ela l'hachayoto. The din that this individual has a din like Israel is only with regards to sustaining him. As Rashi says over here, Beit din mitzuvim lefarneso mishum v'chei achicha imach. That you have to take care of this individual. And you have to provide for him, you have to sustain him. But that is the only din which with regards to calling him Rov Yisrael, he is Israel, that we grant him those rights. Aval Yuchasin, lo. As far as Yuchasin are concerned, this individual cannot marry into a kahuna. It's not considered to be a kasher le kahuna. There are questions about the yichus of this individual. Ushmuel amar lefakeach alav et agal. And Shmuel says, in order to remove a pile from upon him on Shabbat. So you see here that with regards to determining with a single rove that the individual is Israel, it has limiting impact. It's only limited to these dinim. But as far as Yuchasin are concerned, one rove is not sufficient. So how is it possible that Rav Paskin like our Mishnah, which is according to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, and Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri in our Mishnah only has one rove? So how do you reconcile those? Ishtamite, he forgot Hadam Rabbi Yudam Rav. He forgot about this other piece of the puzzle that we actually used to qualify our Mishnah. Dam Rabbi Yudam Rav Bikronot Shel Tzipuri Havo. That the case here is a case where there were other parties here, caravans going through, Yom HaShuk, whatever it was, that created a double rove. And because it created a double rove, the case in the Mishnah is actually a case of double rove. And that's why Rav Paskin like our Mishnah, that it's mutar, because there we have a double rove. In the case here of Matzah Batinok, we only have a single rove. Wait a minute. According to Rav Chanan, who said this was just a horat sha'ah, this is a one-time heter, why is it only a one-time heter? If they're Trey Ruby over here, then it really should have been a heter the dorot, and not just a one-time heter. Man de matniha, lo matniha. So we'll read it according to Rashi. Rashi says that Rav Chanan, who paskin like the Mishnah as a horat sha'ah, obviously does not have the modification, the qualification that we have, Amar Yehuda Marav, that we're talking about Trey Rube in the Mishnah. Rav, who has that and says that the Mishnah is talking about Trey Rube, paskins like the Mishnah, l'alocha. On the other hand, Rav Chanan, who says that the Mishnah was only a one-time reason, for whatever reason they decided that they wanted to paskin this way because they found a tzad heter over here. Nevertheless, that doesn't have implications to Dorot, because the case of the Mishnah is only one rove. So he obviously doesn't have this qualifying statement of Amar Yehuda Marav. That's why Rashi learns it in the majority of Rishonim. Tosafot brings an alternate shot from the Rabbeinu Chananel, which he rejects and says doesn't make so much sense in the Gemara. Now, the Gemara discusses the implications of the Mishnah that we brought from Makshirim with regards to finding the child and determining if the city is Rov Yisrael, Rov Ovdei Kochavim, or Mechsa. What implications that does that have? Now, as far as why don't we just take this child and convert this child, and then there wouldn't be any problem taking him to the mikveh, that might relate to the sugi that we saw earlier in terms of Beit Din. That Beit Din is mizakin the katan, but it's only in the case either where the katan comes of his own volition and asks to convert, or in a case where the parents bring the katan in order to convert them. But otherwise, Beit Din in general would not get involved in converting a child when they don't know the real story or issues involved with this child. They're not going to automatically convert the child. Number two is, even if they do convert the child, there's still a possibility or plausibility that he will reject this when he comes of age. So therefore, doing this is not, you're not going to solve your problem necessarily. So now the Gemara discusses what are the implications of the fact that Im Rov Dev De Kochavim Oved Kochavim Im Rov Yisrael Yisrael Mechsa Mechsa Yisrael Amar Rav Lo Shanu El Hachayoto. That's only true to sustain him. Aval Yuchasin Lo Ushmuel Amar Levakeach Elav Etagal Umi Amar Shmuel Hachi. Can Shmuel really say this? Ba'amar Rav Yosef Amar Rav Yudam Shmuel Ein Hochim Bipikuach Nefesh Achar Rov. We don't use Rov to determine when it comes to issues of life and death. Because there is a principle in the Torah which is V'chai Bahem. And that's an overarching principle which says that we no longer consider Rov. If there's any tzad that we could save this individual, we're going to save this individual irrespective of whether the Rov is this way or that way. So why should Rov dictate over here in terms of the Fakeach et Agal that we're going to take off the pile from him on Shabbat? Why does Rov matter? Eliki Itmar Shmuel Areisha Itmar. When Shmuel says he's going on the first part of this Mishnah, Im Rov Oved Kochavim, Oved Kochavim, that if they are majority Oved Kochavim, we classify him like an Oved Kochavim. So Amar Shmuel, Olufakeach Alavet Agal, Einu Kain. That's not true with regards to Shabbat. When it comes to Shabbat, we will save this individual. We will be Mechalel Shabbat on his behalf, because we're going to assume that we don't follow the Rov there. We assume even if it's a minority or is even a smallest chance that this is a Jew, that we want to save him. Then, Im Rov Oved Kochavim, Oved Kochavim, Namai Hilchata. According to most, this is a question within Shmuel's Shita. Then what's the implication of the fact that he's considered to be an Oved Kochavim over here? According to Rav, it's obvious. He's treated like an Oved Kochavim. But according to Shmuel, who says we treat him like a Jew now, then what is it that he's considered to be a Goy for? Some Rapapa, Lachilot, Nivelot. That we actually be a Daim, feed him non-kosher food? Because based on the Rov, we determine that he is considered to be an Oved Kochavim. Im Rov Yisrael Yisrael, the majority are Yisrael, then he's classified as Yisrael. In all these cases, the question amongst Rishonim, is this only according to the Shita of Shmuel, or does Rav agree to this as well? L'mai Hilchoto, what's the halachic implications of this? Harapapa lachzir lo aveda, because you're allowed to return him in aveda. If he's a Rov Yisrael, then we say that he's classified like Yisrael, you can return him in aveda. Tosafot and Rashi quote over here, that there's a tremendous Isur in returning an aveda to an Oved Kochavim. Based on the Gemara, they show that it's a big Isur and a big problem to return an Aveda to a non-Jew. And based on that, they said that we're not going to allow you to return it. Now over here, we're saying, okay, we go after the Rov, we go after the majority. But we have a principle in Shmuel. Shmuel in general in Shas says, "En olchim achar Rov b'mamon," that we don't go after the majority when it comes to Mamon. So why over here all of a sudden is he going after the Rov when it comes to monetary matters? So most of the Rishonim say that there is a mitigating factor over here, which is that there's the mitzvah of Hashavat Eveda. This is not your stam case of Rov and Mamon, because there's also this factor that you have an obligation to return the object. That's one way that they solve it. The other way to solve it is that generally when we say Ein Olchim Achar Rov and Mamon, it's because there's a chazaka that goes against it. The person in possession of the money has a chazaka, and we're not going to use Rov to take away that chazaka by Mamon. In this case, the person who's holding the object is somebody who found it. It's clearly he doesn't really have a chazaka on the object because he just found it. And therefore, over here, maybe we'll allow Rov to override it. Tosafot gives another possible answer here, which says that we only say, Ein olchim achar Rov, that is, Hainu b'mocher shor l'chaveiro, v'nimsa nagachanch b'heter ba'u ma'ot liyado. That's in a case where there's a transaction, and through heter, you acquired the monies, or the item is in your possession. Umidatam. Not nulo, and they were given voluntarily to this individual. Avahocha, modi das lina bataruba. But over here, where none of this happened voluntarily, therefore we will go after our Rov. But again, Rashi and Tosafot both say here that there's a huge problem returning an Aveda to a non-Jew. I'll just read you, I have a very favorite smag. It's a Sefer Mitzvah Agadol, Mitzvah Asay Ayin Dali, with regards to a Shabbat Aveda. He quotes the Gemara that both Rashi and Tosafot quote, that there is no obligation to return an Aveda to a Goy. And on the end of that, he says, Kvar derashti the galut Yerushalayim er service farad, ulishar galiyot edom. I've already given this drasha to all those of the galut that are in Sfarad, in Spain, and those that are in galut edom, in Germany, and France. Ki ata, sheiricha galut yoter midai. We have been in exile for way too long. Yesh liyishrael abdil mehevle olam, ulechoz b'chotmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Jews have to separate themselves away from the trivial things of the world, and to hold on to the stamp of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shu Emet. And that is truth, and they have to act with truth. Shalom l'shaker. They may not lie. Lo li Yisrael, velo li goyim. Not to Jews, not to non-Jews. Velo li hatodam bishum inyan. And you're not allowed to deceive them or trick them or be corrupt in your practices in any way. Ulekadesh etzmam af bimutar lehem. And they should sanctify themselves, even though maybe there's no din of a Shabbat Aveda over here. You should still sanctify yourself and go lifnim mishurat din. You should be someone who goes the extra step to show how honest you are. Shenemar, he quotes the pasuk, Sherit Yisrael, lo yasu avla, velo yidabru chazav, velo yimatzav b'fiyam l'shon tarmit. So you see here, the pasuk says the remainder of Israel will be people who do not lie, who do not have any falsehoods that are associated with them, and nothing of untruth comes out of their mouth. And when Hashem comes and brings Mashiach to redeem us, Yomru Agoyim b'din asah, then all the non-Jewish nations looking on will say, he acted properly. Because these are people who are honest, upright. These are people of tremendous moral standing. And it's right, Hashem picked the right people. And therefore, they have the Torah, and Hashem should redeem them. If you act with the non-Jews in a tricky, conniving manner, Yomru ruma asa Kadosh Baruch Hu shebachar lechalko ganavim v'ramaim, that he picked for his group of people that he's coming to redeem and bring Mashiach, he picked a bunch of thieves, he picked a bunch of people who cheat and steal. V'arei ki yikbir HaKadosh Baruch Hu gezel v'sheim. And Hashem is even worried about the gezel v'sheim, shenemar v'timilei al haaretz chamas. So we see that Hashem cares about emet and truth, even about the Rishayim. And therefore the Jews have to act lifnim mishurat din, and the Smag says it's important to return an Aveda, even to a non-Jew, to act lifnim mishurat din, so that people should look at us as a paradigm of truth and a paradigm of moral behavior. Because then when Hashem comes to redeem us, they'll say, he picked the right people to be the people that Mashiach comes to take and redeem and bring them the Geula Shleima. Anyway, one of my favorite Smags there, which he adds is on the end, that really, even though mi'ikar alocha, this is the din, nevertheless, there is a reason not to do these things and to act in a manner that brings a kiddush Hashem in everything that we do. So now, just continuing the Gemara, he says, mechza mechza Yisrael, if it's 50-50, we deem him to be Yisrael, the ma'ilchata. What's alocha there? Amarish lokesh l'nizakin. Has your nafkamina in terms of damages. Hey, chidami, what's the case? Ine d'nachay tordi dan l'tordi dei. If it's a case where our shore damaged his shore, then lemelei aiti raya d'Yisraelat. V'shekol, you should bring us proof that you're Israel, and then you'll take payment. This is based on the Mishnah in Baba Kama that says that with regards to a Kanani versus Israel, when it comes to Israel that damages another Israel, if his shore is a muad, a wild shore, then he pays mezek shalem. If his shore, Tom, is a tame shore, then he pays chatzi nezek. When it comes to a non-Jew, he always pays nezek shalem. There's no distinction between shor muad and shor tam. The other way around, where the Jewish shor attacks or hurts or damages the shor of a Kanani, over there the Jew doesn't have to pay at all. Again, this is not the subject for this Gemara over here. There in Baba Kama, the Gemara discusses why that is, and the Rishonim discuss about the ramifications of that too today. But based on that Mishnah, the Gemara says over here, if a Jew's shore, a regular Israel shore, damages the shore of this individual as a safek, and he wants to come and collect from the Jew, then he's got to bring a motzi michaver al avarai. He's got to bring a raya that he's a Israel, not a Kanani, and he's entitled to a collection. So that certainly can't be the case. No, tzricha denachay tor didei, the tor didan. No, it was a case where his shore did damage to our shore. So palga mishalem, 50% he's got to pay, because no matter what, he's chayav. Even if it's a tam, even if he's a Israel, he would have to pay it. The other 50% is b'safek. V'idach paulo amalahu. He can say to the Jew, "Aiti raya d'lav Israel." Anna, come bring proof that I'm not a Israel. V'atan lechon, and I'll give it to you. V'atan lechon, and I'll give you that money. So you see over here that he's deemed to be Israel in this case because he can make the demand that you prove that he's not a Israel, and only has to pay like a short time, chatzi nezek, like a Israel, and not like a Kenani. Now, obviously, they could have used some of these nafkamino in different cases here, but the Gemara wanted to come up with a separate nafkamino for each one of these instances where Rov Yisrael makes a difference, where Rov Kanani makes a difference, and where Mechsa Mechsa makes a difference. With that, we end the first parak. Hadron Alach, Betula Niseit. Now, the next Mishnah begins, the second parak. Aisha Shenit Armela Onit Garsha. In an instance where a woman was widowed or divorced, he omerit Betula Nasatani. When I got married, I was a bitula, and therefore my ketubah was 200 zuz, and I'm entitled to 200 zuz at this point in time. Now, either she's arguing with the husband because there was a divorce over here, or in a case where she's widowed, she's arguing with the yorshim, or with whoever the executors of the estate are to get her money for the ketubah out of the estate. V'omer, lo, ki elo almana nisadich. When I married you, were an almana, and you're only entitled to a ketubah of 100 zuz. So obviously this is a case where there is no ketubah present. So either the ketubah was lost, or this is in a location where they don't write a ketubah, and it's automatically assumed. I mean, it's a t'nai beitin that the woman gets the monies of the ketubah, or the protection of the ketubah, even though she doesn't actually have the document of the ketubah. But over here, we don't have any evidence to the fact that she is a betulah. Imi yesh edim she'atzat behinuma. If we have edim that she went out with this hinuma, which the Gemara will explain what that is, but it was something that was only worn by betulot when they went out to the chuppah, virosha parua, and her hair was uncovered. Rashi over here says that her hair was let down on her shoulders, which again was something they only did for the betulot. Then ketubata mataim. Then automatically, if we have edim that show evidence of the fact that her wedding displayed characteristics of a wedding of a betulah, then she's entitled to mataim. Even if they were handing out roasted nuts at the wedding, that's another thing they only did at a wedding of a betulah, and that's also siman that this woman was a betulah when she got married, and therefore she's entitled to 200 zuz. Umode Rabbi Yeshua bomer lechaviro sadeh zu shel avicha haita. And Rabbi Yeshua agrees in a case where a person says that this field belonged to your father, and I bought it from him, that he's believed in that case. Because the only reason we know that this field belonged to this other individual's father is because he told us. So when he tells us that, then we also have to believe him that he bought it from him. Because without this individual, he wouldn't have known it belonged to his father. And so now, if we believe him that it belonged to the father, we also have to believe him that he bought it from the father. On the other hand, if there are witnesses there, shehi shel aviv, that it belongs to his father, meaning that it belonged to the other party's father, and then this person says, I bought it from your father, he's not automatically believed over there, because now we have outside evidence or verification that it belonged to the father, and he doesn't have a right to say now that I bought it from him. He has to bring proof, either a shtar, a chazakah, some other form of proof that he actually owns the land over here and that he purchased it from this individual's father. Otherwise, he will not automatically be Ne'eman, because now we no longer have a Pesha Asur, Pesha Itir, because the Edim are the ones that say that it was from Aviv, or from this individual's father, and he's the one saying that he bought it from him. Now, Tosva points out over here, that from Rashi's pshat over here, this is only a case, K'she'en Hala Tov'o, V'Ne'eman B'Migo, that Rabbi Yeshua agrees over here in this case, where we say that this field belonged to your father and I bought it from him. That's only true when the other party's not a claimant and not coming in and saying, you owe me this or it belongs to my father, I want it. That is the case where we believe him because he has a migo. The migo is he could have said nothing. The fact that he opened up here and now said that it belonged to this individual's father, we're going to believe him here because he could have just been silent and said it was mine all along. And that's why Rashi says that he's believed over here. Tosfot says, Veinu Nira. Tosfot says that only when you have edim is there a problem. That's what the Mishnah sounds like. When they're edim, he's not believed. But when there's no edim, he is believed. Even if the other party is claiming that it was his father's and saying, I want my field back, nevertheless, if we have no other evidence besides the fact that he agrees and says, yes, it was your father's land, but I bought it from him, that's enough for him to believe the migo, because to be amar, lo yitash l'abicha me'olam, because he could have denied the whole thing. And there's still a migo, even when there's a claimant on the other side, the son is saying, that was my father's field. That's not enough evidence to say that this is still not a pesha asur, a pesha hitir. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.